Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks.
Joining me today on One Nation Indivisible is Rob Boston, writer, author, debater, debunker. Rob has been fighting Christian nationalism in various guises, professionally for nearly 40 years, with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And Rob has been something of a mentor, something of a role model for me. He's an icon in this movement. He's generated millions. I'd be curious to know how many millions of words for our side. And he is retiring this week. Rob, welcome to One Nation Indivisible.
Thank you so much for having me on, Andrew.
So I really wanted to have you on because you've had a remarkable career. You know, you've got several books, The Most Dangerous Man in America, Close Encounters with the Religious Right, Why the Religious Right is Wrong, about Separation of Church and State, Taking Liberties, which is about the weaponization of religious freedom. And that's just the books that you've written. Leave aside all of the articles and the blog. I mean, you've done so much. You've been on Fox News. And you're retiring. It's you know, it's bittersweet for me because you've been such a great mentor and role model. But can you take us back to the beginning, before we do the retrospective, take us back to the beginning of how you got in to church-state separation? Because this is back in 1987. Ronald Reagan has just nominated Anthony Kennedy to the Supreme Court, and now Kennedy's gone. His replacement, Kavanaugh, has been on the bench for 7 years already. So take us back to the beginning.
Yes, 1987. Now, before I should talk about coming to Americans United, though, I want to say that I've always been a big advocate of separation of church and state, just personally, before I did it professionally. And, you know, one of the reasons that came about, Andrew, is 8 years of Catholic schools.
That'll do it.
Catholic education where they order you to pray at different times of the day and command, you know, you have these religious experiences. Now, you know, I want to be clear, this is a private school and they had the right to do it, but compelled prayer just really rubbed me the wrong way. Another reason I was such a strong advocate of the principle is that my reading of history, which anybody who reads history knows that combinations of religion and state never protect or lift up freedom. They always crush it. So that was a very important lesson. But in 1987, I got the opportunity to begin to do this work professionally by coming to the Americans United staff. I had been living in Washington, D.C. I'm originally from central Pennsylvania. Came down to Washington in 1986, was looking for some type of policy work. Was working a job, you know, just sort of routine editing to pay the bills. Saw this job in the Washington Post employment section one Sunday.
Wait, just hang on, pause there too, because like I want, like, this is, we're talking the classifieds, the print classifieds,
right.
Which for maybe some of our listeners, like, this is how you used to have to find a job. There was no online, there was no, and so you see this classified, this tiny little ad. What does it say?
Right, yeah. Well, it says that Americans United for Separation of Church and State is looking for a journalist to write for their monthly magazine and to help out with media relations. And I said, that's the job for me. And luckily, Joe Kahn, who was at that time the editor of Church and State, agreed and brought me on. And the rest is just, you know, my career. I stayed because it was such an amazing place and such an important issue to work on that I never wanted to step away from it.
And because you are a historian and journalist at heart, do you still have the classified ad, Rob?
I do still have the classified ad in a notebook somewhere. And the funny thing about that ad is there's a typo in it.
It's so good. You couldn't write it. It's amazing. So you come to Americans United. You come as a, you know, a journalist, a fledgling kind of comms person, and then you work your way up. All the way through, you ran the magazine, you ran the comms shop, and then you kind of filled this sort of this senior statesman, senior advisor role to help kind of bring the organization into this new maturation that we're seeing.
Well, it's really amazing. The things I've done over Americans United have always been in the context of communication. But what's really amazing is that Americans United always encouraged me to try new things and to grow my position. I spent my first 25 years at Americans United, technically in the same job, and my job title didn't change. But during that time, I wrote several books, traveled around the country speaking, appeared on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, NPR, other networks, talked to major media folks, because Americans United gave me the space to grow that position and to try new things as I felt confident taking them on. So that was a wonderful thing in itself. And I just want to stress that that's a really important thing, because a lot of people would think, well, you know, you're in the same job for 25 years. Well, not really, because I had all these great opportunities to grow it in so many ways.
I mean, you've been all over the country speaking about this. I mean, I think you've spoken probably multiple times to every, you know, secular group out there in churches. Have you visited all 50 states for AU?
I've been in all the lower 48 states, most of that related to speaking engagements for Americans United. That actually, Andrew, was one of the most fulfilling and exciting parts of the job for me, was to be able to get out on the road and do things like that.
I love it too. They never sent you to Hawaii, though.
You know, it just didn't happen. As much as that's good for that, it just didn't happen. But I did get to some beautiful places, I have to say. One of the first trip I ever took for Americans United was San Francisco. And I was maybe 25 years old. I'd never been on the West Coast before. So it was quite an exciting adventure to me to go across the country like that.
And, you know, Americans United, it's really a unique organization in this space. I mean, you know, you and I are both, we're godless heathens. And, you know, Americans United is this church-state separation organization. It's not an atheist org. It's not a free thought org. It was started by clergy. Can you talk a little bit about why you think that aspect of this fight is relevant and important?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I really do think the idea that we have a broad base supporting separation of church and state, running all the way from very devout believers to folks who, like us, who don't have any particular religious perspective and identify as atheist or humanist or agnostics, what have you. We've got the whole range covered there. That's very important. You know, Americans United's history was grounded in Christian churches when it was founded in 1947. But over the years, it evolved and changed and became a much broader organization. But the religious voice is still with us, and I think still very important. We want Americans of all different stripes to acknowledge and recognize the importance of separation of church and state. And I think most do, but unfortunately we have these loud voices of Christian nationalism that claim falsely to speak for all Christians, attacking that principle of separation of church and state and trying to tear it down.
You know, one of the things you, Rachel, and I have have talked about kind of quite a lot is this idea that shared values matter more than shared beliefs in this fight, and that really, I like to phrase it that when we have the separation of church and state, everybody wins, right? And this has been made into a partisan issue, but it's not really a part. Like if somebody tells you they support the separation of church and state, it shouldn't really tell you anything else about them or their political views.
I think you're right, and I think it's unfortunate that it's become politicized, because it didn't used to be that way. 2 years before I started at Americans United, so it was 1985, the organization took a membership survey, and 50% of its members identified as Republican. That's a pretty amazing statistic.
Wow.
Because that showed that the Republican Party, you know, as recently as the mid-1980s, was not completely captured by Christian nationalism. In fact, had many people in it who supported separation of church and state. I do think the politicization, partisan nature of it is very unfortunate, because as you point out, the principle of separation of church and state is good for everybody, no matter what your religious beliefs are or your philosophical beliefs are, or no matter what your political beliefs are. It protects everybody's right to believe or not, and to make some of the most important intimate decisions for yourself, instead of having the government make those for you, or to press religion on you, or to compel you to support somebody else's faith. Everybody should want that. Liberals, conservatives, moderates, folks of all political persuasions.
And you've really seen some stuff, because you've done this for so long. And one of my favorite things is chatting just about this AU history with you and the history of the movement. But you know, one of the things that we're seeing right now is that anti-Muslim bigotry is kind of back in a big way. You know, probably likely going to be a test run before the midterms. But you know, we've seen Senator Tuberville has been on this. Randy Fine's been on this. We've seen the governors of Florida and Texas, you know, going after Muslim groups. And this is a kind of a common tactic of Christian nationalists and you know, all the various iterations of Christian nationalism. They scapegoat various groups of people, right? Like they talk about the caravans of migrants, big into scapegoating trans folk over the last few years. So like at this particular moment, it's Muslim people. It's been gay people. And I mean, I wonder if you could just talk about that as a common thread that you've seen throughout the decades of doing this work, that scapegoating and how harmful and how frustrating it is to kind of play whack-a-mole on our side with the different groups they're attacking.
Yes, that is a very common tactic of Christian nationalism, an unfortunate tactic, but one they use. They're always trying to make Americans afraid of a certain class of individuals. You might remember, Andrew, that back in the 80s, there was a lot of talk out of these groups about secular humanism. Now, you know, secular humanism is a thing. It does exist. But most Americans didn't know what that was. So religious right groups were spinning this wild conspiracy theory that secular humanists had controlled education. They controlled the media. They controlled so many aspects of public life. And they were trying to drive God out of the equation as much as they could. Well, that faded away after a few years because people just couldn't grasp, you know, what this movement was supposed to be. So they moved on to attacking, as you point out, members of the LGBTQ community. They moved on to attacking Muslims, and they moved on to attacking people who are immigrants and so on. It's just always somebody that they're attacking to hold up that you're supposed to be afraid of.
Yeah, it's like they need that other. They need somebody that they can ostracize and alienate and scapegoat and otherize to keep. It's almost like to keep their coalition united. And you know, I mean, one of the things that I've been struggling with and thinking about and talking about on this podcast a lot is, you know, Christian nationalism is not a religion, right? It's a political ideology that has heavy religious elements, but you know, there are Catholic Christian nationalists, there are Jewish Christian nationalists, it's a very strange coalition, and it's a political coalition at heart, but it seems like what we've seen over your career is kind of the falling down of sectarian differences, right? So it's like, even just to take the biggest one, you know, between Protestants and Catholics, in favor of kind of centering that Christian nationalist identity. And I wonder if that's something that you've noticed from, you know, the beginning of your career to what we see right now.
Well, I remember at the time I started, there was still a certain bit of tension between conservative Protestants and conservative Catholics, even though they shared certain political goals. A lot of that really has fallen by the wayside. Now, what I find most interesting about Christian nationalism, one of the things I find interesting about it is ironically, in the use of the word Christian, because, as you know, there are probably tens of millions of Christians all over the country who don't agree with anything they're doing, who oppose them strongly, and yet they're Christians. And this is something that goes back quite a while. I remember attending some meetings of religious right groups in the 80s and 90s, and they would talk about, well, here's what Christians believe. And of course, what they meant was extremely conservative, fundamentalist Christians. So they have taken this extremely narrow definition of that term and really, I think, twisted it in a way that's very offensive to a lot of liberal and moderate Christians. And one of the things that Americans United has tried to do so well, I think successfully over the years, is bring those other Christian voices to bear so that they will stand up and say, wait a minute, you do not speak for the entirety of Christendom and we don't agree with you on anything, yet we are still Christians.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to beat Christian nationalism without Christians advocating against it.
Absolutely.
You know, and to kind of your point, I often think about Lincoln's second inaugural, where he talks about how both sides read from the same Bible and both sides prayed to the same God. And kind of there's this division in Christianity in America that goes back quite a ways, you know, and it's kind of like, is it going to be this deeply conservative retrogressive movement, or is it going to be progressive and more liberal and, you know, maybe fight to free people and fight for their rights kind of thing? But either way, we still need that movement if we're going to, we need the folks in that movement if we're going to have a separation of church and state or defeat Christian nationalism.
Right. And one of the things that I think is really valuable about separation of church and state is it allows for the flourishing of all those different types of Christianity. You know, we don't want the government to take a side. We don't want the government to be involved in a, you know, proof texting contest. The idea is that people will hash all that out in their private arenas. And folks who believe in an extremely conservative interpretation can make their best argument, and folks who believe in a more liberal interpretation can make their best argument. But the government says we're neutral, and we're not going to base any of our policies on these interpretations that you're hashing out privately. That's not the point. The point of the government is to fashion policies for everybody, whether you're Christian, non-Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, Wiccan, whatever you might be. Unfortunately, we see the Supreme Court, you know, inching toward this idea that laws can have a religious rationale, abandoning the famous Lemon Test from the 1970s that said that laws must have a secular rationale. That's very dangerous because that leaves us with laws that have a religious rationale. And then the next question obviously is, whose religion?
Yeah. And statistically, it's not going to be yours. Whoever is listening, it's just, odds are it's not going to be yours. And yeah, I mean, I wonder, you've been doing this for so long and we are in, you know, a desperate fight right now. What are the lessons that you think are important for people who are going to continue this fight to know that you've learned over those four decades?
I would say a couple of things. Number one is be aware of the long-term nature of this struggle.
Yeah.
And I say that because there have been different points in my time with Americans United where self-appointed political pundits have written off Christian nationalism as a dead movement. You know, we heard that when Bill Clinton was elected in 1992. We heard it again when Barack Obama was elected in 2008. Well, this is a movement that is well-funded, well-organized, and it has staying power. So we shouldn't assume that it's ever going to suffer a death blow anytime soon. And therefore, that means we have to have a long-term vision as well. And we have to keep fighting because these people are always going to be coming after some of these basic principles. Second thing I would say, and this is more of a political comment, but basically I think what people need to keep in mind is you cannot expect perfection from politicians. That's just not the way it works.
So yeah.
If you can find somebody you agree with 85 or 90% of the time, that's pretty good. If you're demanding purity 100%, you're never going to be happy. The reason I say that is because Christian nationalists have learned that lesson. I mean, look at them rallying around Donald Trump, who obviously is not a man of any kind of deep faith, biblically illiterate, has the morals of an alley cat. Yet they said, well, he's going to get things done for us. So they put some of their thoughts aside and back him. My point is that when it comes to politics, you have to be willing to make some compromises to move the ball forward. And I think sometimes people are on the more progressive side of the equation are a little reluctant to do that. And then as a result, instead of getting 85% of what they want, they get 0%.
I mean, I think that one's such an important lesson too, because I mean, you are never going to fully agree with any politician running for office. There's going to be something you disagree with. The only person you will ever agree with 100% of the time is yourself. So unless you're running for office, like, you should expect to have a pretty significant and sizable disagreement with one of the two people that is going to win that race. And yeah, I think people really just do need to get comfortable with electing somebody that is not perfect, but good or good enough for now. You know, I mean, and it goes to me, that goes very well with your first point, which is that this is a long game. Like, there's no politician that is going to save us. There's no savior out there. Like, this is progress is hard and incremental, and we fight inch by inch by inch. It's not something that just, you know, you elect somebody who's all powerful and they snap their fingers and there we are.
Yeah, I think sometimes, too, people in this country lack some basic knowledge about how the system actually works.
When I
listen to politicians give speeches and they talk about all the stuff we're going to do, there's a part of me saying, well, you're going to do that if the legislature passes that law or the Congress passes that law or the courts uphold that law. It's nice to hear a politician give a very fiery speech and endorse a lot of things that you believe. But the reality is we have three branches of the government and they are supposed to be checks and balances on one another. So people need to understand some of the basic stuff, too, about how things work and realize that there may be limitations about what a single person who's elected to office is able to do.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit, too, about sort of more your, I don't know if personal philosophy is quite the right phrase to describe it, but, you know, to me, you don't just work at Americans United. Again, you talk to all manner of different groups, secular groups, atheist groups. You know, you're often at the Secular Coalition for America, giving talks to the heads of all of these different groups. You know, you're representing this movement on television. And you know, I think behind the scenes, you've been involved in a lot of other things with the Secular Student Alliance on AHA's board. And, you know, the way that you operate is very, you're very selfless and you operate like this rising tide and you do lift all of the boats. You lift the entire movement with you. And I'm going to embarrass you a little bit and tell, you know, just that this, one of the first times that you and I interacted was when this is back in 2015, when I was still trying to figure out how to sell The Founding Myth as a book and was told I got to go get some blurbs. And I knew your name. I actually went back and found the first time I cited you, which was in a Law Review article I wrote in 2009. But I reached out to this guy, Rob Boston, who's this great author who I admire. I wonder if he would write a blurb for The Founding Myth. And you did. It was a very kind, and it's in the book right now for anybody who's got a copy. It's on the front page there, and then you continued to read the manuscript. About 6 months later, I got another email from you about a line I had about Thomas Jefferson's polygraph and a historical error that I had in there. But it was so, you know, it was just a lovely little email. Just, you know, hey, just want to make sure that, you know, it's important that we get all of our facts right because the other side's going to pick it apart, which I fully agree with. And, you know, here's what really was going on with that. And I was so pleased when I got it because I also caught the mistake on one of my read-throughs and I was like, but you know, I mean, that's you, you know, you didn't have to go back and reread it and send me that, but that is who Rob Boston is. And I wonder if you could talk about that, just that, what your personal philosophy is, because you've had such an impact, and it's not just because of the time, it's because of how you operate.
Well, one of the things that has always driven me, Andrew, is looking for new talent, so to speak. So to return the compliment, I was excited to see you becoming a more prominent figure in this movement because I knew you had the chops to really make a difference too. So to my thinking, anything I can do to nurture that or bring that along or help bring along some of the younger activists, I'm going to definitely do that. One of the things that I've tried to do over the years, and I think I have been successful with this, at Americans United and in other venues, is to put my ego aside. This isn't about one person. Who's going to get the most media? Who's going to get in the paper more often? This is about advancing our movement, advancing our issue, and getting the American people to understand why we're no longer a free country if we don't have separation of church and state. So if you're the man to make that argument right now, at this time, I'm going to be backing you up 100% because I want that argument to get out. I'm not going to sit back and say, I want to do that instead. We just need to all kind of be working here together on these things. One of the things that I'm really excited about, one of the reasons actually I feel I can retire right now, is that Americans United is cultivating new youth voices and new youth leaders who I really believe are going to carry this movement through for us in the coming years. And I'll be cheering them off on the sideline. So my theory has always been, if you're going to be an advocate for this cause, I'm going to back you up. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we may not agree on some other things. You know, there are some religious voices out there that advocate very strongly for separation of church and state. And obviously, as a humanist, I don't agree with them on religious questions. But when it comes to separation of church and state, we're on the same side. So let's work together. Let's push this through.
So, you know, one thing that you and I have done a lot of, too, is we've done a lot of documentaries and a lot of interviews for and a lot of those. I mean, folks don't realize this, but like, you know, when you get a certain, you know, I guess the number of books you've read, whatever it is, when you get to a certain level, you get a lot of requests to do documentaries, but half of them are, more than half of them are not funded. I don't know how many you've done that have gone nowhere, but to me, it feels like a dozen probably of documentary interviews that I've had that have gone nowhere. But, you know, we both were in God and Country, which was Rob Reiner's documentary on Christian nationalism, and you know we were texting after the murder of Rob Reiner, and no, I wonder if you can talk about the reason I'm thinking about this is because of the legacy that we leave behind. Like that documentary is going to be viewed for you know decades more to come. So the books that you've written are, you know, a way, I don't believe in immortality or, you know, anything like that, but, you know, they are a way to outlive our short biological lifespan. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit, think a little bit about what is the legacy that you hope to leave behind as you slide into retirement here.
Right. Well, one of the things that I really want to make sure I do is blaze some trails that others can follow. I talked a moment ago about the youth leaders, and if some of the work that I'm doing or have done is useful to them in the years to come, then that really excites me. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can maybe rely on some research that I've done or that you've done. I think that that's extremely important. And also, this may seem like almost like a science fiction sort of scenario, but you know, at some point in the very distant future, I would love if we had a planet and a culture where religious extremism and religious zealotry just didn't exist anymore. So the people who studied it as an academic subject in the way that an academic right now will study something from the Middle Ages that doesn't happen anymore. and if they could get books that we have written, and that would be something that would inform their understanding of this sort of ancient way of doing things. That would be pretty cool.
It would be cool. All right, so we're going to lob a few rapid fire at you, and then we're going to close out, and you're going to tell us why you feel hopeful, because one of the last things you've written for Americans United was why you have hope. But so these are kind of like war story rapid fire. So like, what's the worst interview you ever did.
Well,
either because it was hard or because it just went off the rails. And you know, like,
that's easy. That was Fox News. It used to be this guy on Fox News named John Gibson, who was kind of like a poor man's Bill O'Reilly, and he was obsessed with the fake war on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And he had me on to talk about it, and he was spinning these crazy stories. I knew they were nonsense, and I just called him a liar, and he exploded. His face got bright red. He rung at each other. He actually somehow, after the show, he tracked down my home number. He called me up at home. He was yelling at me some more.
Oh, my God.
I always tried to remain cool when I was in a situation like on Fox News. But yeah. In that case, it just exploded.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. There was a back when I was at FFRF, you know, I had attorneys on either side of my office, including my wife, Liz Cavell, who's there was a thin wall between our office. And, you know, she heard me. I was yelling so loud on the phone one day. And that I'm on the phone yelling, and I look out, and like the attorneys are all like kind of grouped around my like office window being like, you know, like cut it, Andrew, like give me the signal to get, you know, get the hook. And I kept going, and they thought I was talking to an opposing counsel. But I was on the phone with LG customer service because they would not replace a TV that was under warranty, and I was losing my mind with them and kept working my way up the line. So I had got to go out and be like, no, that wasn't, it wasn't opposing counsel. It wasn't a judge. It wasn't an interview. It was just, yeah. What's the most fun writing assignment that you've had?
Well, that's tough because I have done this so much over the years.
You can have multiple answers.
Yes, yeah, all the magazine articles I did for Church and State, the blog posts that I've written, press releases, speeches. That's very challenging. I would just say, generally speaking, since I do like history, you know, I don't have a degree in that area, but I'm an amateur and armchair historian. Any opportunity I've had to write about some of the historical aspects of separation of church and state that maybe aren't as well known to people, like the Treaty of Tripoli, the Flushing Remonstrance, some of the views of the founders that are not as well known, I really enjoyed bringing that to light because I think that's just instructive and helping people understand the important historical basis of separation of church.
And there's so much historical disinformation out there that the other side is just constantly throwing out. I have so much fun too. You know, like you're reading an old letter, and all of a sudden you find a quote you didn't know about, and it's like, yeah, they really did. They really did want this. They were pretty clear about it all the time. What are you gonna do? What's your next big trip? Where are you going?
Well, that's a good question, because my wife retired from her job at the University of Maryland in July, and we've been thinking about, what might be our first big trip together. And one of the things that she has, pardon the pun, floated is a river cruise in Europe.
Nice.
I don't think either one of us is the type of person who wants to go out in the middle of the ocean and be on a giant cruise ship and, you know, do that. But a river cruise where you stop in different cities and you have lectures and it's sort of educationally oriented, that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I can definitely see you and Carol doing that. That's seems right up your alley or your river. So, yeah, I mean, like, I'm thinking like Danube. I just read a murder mystery too. I cannot remember the name of the author though, but it was like a Viking river cruise where somebody is murdered. It was super super fun. You know, it's like Murder on the Orient Express, right? Because you're on the boat.
We're gonna be booking a river cruise that doesn't have any murders on it.
Yeah,
that's saying that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Death on the Nile. So not a Death on the Nile type situation. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, though, listen, Rob, if you need a second act, you know, all of a sudden, like, church state advocate becomes a detective.
Yeah, there you go.
You've got, yeah. You solve, listen, or maybe that's your next book. Maybe you take a turn with fiction and.
That's an interesting idea, Andrew. I'm going to take all these under advisement.
Yep, you sound like it. Okay, so before we sign off, because I, despite me laughing a lot just then, I think a lot of people are, you know, we're at the end of the year, you're retiring, things have not been good, they've not been great, they're scary. In the church-state separation arena, you know, it's alarming. So despite all that, you are leaving hopeful, and this is one of the things you've communicated, you know, I mean, throughout the retirement, process, you know, at the party and your the last things you've written for AU. So tell listeners why you are hopeful, right?
It may seem odd that I am optimistic about the future, but I am. And there are a couple reasons for that. One is that the America that Christian nationalists are trying to foist on us, first of all, the people don't want it. I think that's very clear.
Yeah.
And secondly, it just doesn't work. You know, if you look at the demographic data of this nation, you can see that we're shifting and changing in some very significant ways. The number of self-professed Christians, in, you know, in my lifetime, I remember when that was like 95%. Now they're down to like 60, 65, depending on the poll you look at. Clearly, there's people are experiencing spirituality in different ways. Only separation of church and state can give us that type of diversity that the nation is obviously interested in having. So, as I said earlier, this is a long-term fight. We're not going to get this back next year or even the year after that or whatever. We have to be in this for the long haul. But we are going to get a proper understanding of separation of church and state back simply because we have to. Nothing else is going to work for this country in the long haul. So I would just say to folks out there when they're feeling discouraged, you know, take a little break if you need. That's fine. Recharge your batteries. But get back into this thing because we need your voice. And the more folks are out there speaking and agitating and advocating, the faster we'll get this back. Although it will be a bit of a long term, definitely.
Yeah. It's a long fight, and I mean, you know, I think we can push Christian nationalism back to the fringe whence it came, but we've survived as a country, you know, various waves of Christian nationalism, but it always comes back, and so even when we do that, we got to be ready for the next one. So, I mean, Rob Boston, let me just say on behalf of everybody, not just the people who are in this movement, but every American, you know, thank you. Thank you so much for nearly 40 years of fighting the good fight. And everything you have written and said on this front, it's wonderful. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, Andrew. And again, let me say, you know, one of the reasons I feel I can step away is that there are people like you who have come along and are kicking butt. and definitely, I'll be on the sidelines, but I'll be excited to see your future salvos against Christian nationalism, which I know will be many and powerful.
Thank you, my friend, from your lounge chair on the deck of the boat on the Danube. I love it. Rob Boston, thank you for your service. Thank you for joining us on One Nation Indivisible, and enjoy retirement. You have certainly earned it, my friend.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Rob. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.